Radio.
The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
There's something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children. What's that sound? Everybody,
hello, and welcome to Sovereign Minds. It's the end of another long week, and we've had a bunch of things going on, and one of the most notable is obviously, supposedly, we killed Bin Laden. Yay, he's dead. Actually, he's been dead for a little while now, years and years. But, you know, the media's telling us we just got him in this huge heroic ordeal, you know, the secret Navy SEALs, Team 6. Got him. Yes. But anyway, with me I have Mark Kent, as always. Mark, how was your trip, and how are you doing, sir?
Real good. Had a great time down south. There
we go. How you doing? I think I'm on now.
There we go.
Yeah, real good. Had a great time down south. You know, went to Fred Kelly Grant workshop over the weekend, and then I had to go out to a friend of mine's, actually a friend of mine died a few weeks ago, so I had to go to his wake. But, you know, it was really good seeing the family and everything else. So I had a great weekend. How about you?
We had a great one. We missed you here, but I know you were listening, so that's good. Always love having Pastor Williams on. What do you think about this Bin Laden thing?
Well, you know, I mean, I'm not sure what to think about it, because the problem is you get so much disinformation, so many different stories. There's been three or four different stories on the thing. I mean, I think they got him, because I haven't seen any evidence to the contrary, I guess. But, you know, when they got him or how they got him and who got him, you know, it's hard to say. I mean, you get so much disinformation from the media anymore that you can't believe what you don't know what's true anymore.
Well, yeah, their stories just keep changing. And, you know, maybe they did, maybe they didn't, but why is their story keep changing?
Well, you know, the thing for me that's really curious is that here is our enemy. Why would you, you know, give him a Muslim burial at sea? That just, for me, that's what? I mean, really? Here's the guy that, you know, has killed 3,000 or 4,000 people or bombed and over 10 years, you know, embassies, and you have respect for the guy. I'm not sure what that's all about, but that kind of throws a real monkey wrench in the whole plan for me.
Yeah, well, them just getting rid of the body was just. I mean, I know I've been seeing accounts of the burial. Actually, it was like the last resort. It's actually very disrespectful. They never bury their people in the ocean, but to me, they just wanted to get rid of the body extra quick.
It's really hard not to think that, because I mean, why were they in such why are they so anxious to get rid of the body? Why aren't they releasing any of the pictures? You know what's up with all of that? It just there's a lot of things that just doesn't make any sense, and it's hard not to, you know, get a little, you know, woo about it. But
right.
You know,
their stories keep changing. At first he was hiding behind his wife, and then now they changed, and they didn't even kill him inside. And if you look at that compound they had. They had a picture of 2002 and then of 2010, and that thing wasn't even there in 2002. And then all of a sudden, this huge concrete walls were put up and this huge bunker. And
well, it makes you think, was that a compound to keep people out or a compound to keep people in?
Right. Well, in the cities that it was in, there were checkpoints all over the place. There was no way he could have gotten in. And it was right down the street from Pakistani intelligence.
Yeah, how could they not know he was there? I mean,
they knew.
It's like, really?
We have John Perkins with us, and first I would like to just thank our sponsors real quick, Advanced Soil Stabilization. They're using Technosoil for dust control on roads, driveways, and parking lots. Also, they install Crestone driveways. If you'd like to get a hold of, they can call Todd Sykes for more information at 530-549-4801. Advanced Soil is green friendly and eliminates dust. But right now, I'd like to just get to our guest. John Perkins, he was an author, His last book, Confessions of an Economic Hitman, spent over a year and a half on the New York Times bestsellers. And now he has a new book, came out a couple years ago, called Hoodwinked. And it's an economic hitman reveals why the world financial markets imploded and what we need to do to remake them. And, John, I would just like to get to you. And thank you for coming on our show.
It's my pleasure to be with you tonight. Thank you.
So, you have a new book, Hoodwinked, and let's just get to right to it. It says why the world financial markets imploded. So, what would you say? Oh, let's go ahead and give everybody a little bit of a brief history about what you used to do. You used to work for the elites. We talk about the elites running this world and destroying currencies, and basically you were their hitman, weren't you? You were the one that'd go in there and start bribing the officials and all this, right?
I was. You're right. In fact, I worked in many of the countries that are making so much news today, like Egypt and Saudi Arabia and Iran and Kuwait. I never did work in Afghanistan, however. But yeah, I think it's fair to say that economic hitmen created the world's first truly global empire, and the first empire in history that's been created primarily without the military. And if we did this many different ways, but perhaps the most common one was just to simply identify a country with resources that our corporations covet, like oil, and then arrange a huge loan to that country from the World Bank or one of its sisters. However, the money would never actually go to that country. Instead, it would go to our own corporations to build infrastructure projects in that country, things like power plants and industrial parks that benefit a few wealthy families in the country as well as our own corporations, but don't help the majority of the people who are too poor to buy electricity, can't get jobs in industrial parks because they don't hire many people, and yet they're left holding this huge debt that they can't repay. So at some point we go back and say, hey, since you can't repay your debts, sell your oil real cheap to oil companies or whatever the resource is without any environmental restrictions, or let us build a military base on your soil, that sort of thing. And in a few cases where we fail, the jackals come in and either overthrow the governments or assassinate their leaders. And I talk in my books about how I failed with the president of Ecuador, Jaime Roldós, and Panama, Omar Torrijos, and both of them were assassinated by jackal hit squads, CIA operatives, because they failed to go along with what I wanted them to do. I wasn't involved in the hit squads. I did nothing illegal. But this system is an extremely corrupt system, and it's one that has led to a great deal of resentment around the world. It's the sort of thing, in fact, that fosters terrorism around the world.
Yeah, it seems like that's the same thing that's happening, the Federal Reserve is doing to us. Do you draw a parallel to that?
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. The Federal Reserve is a huge part of this system, and there's very good evidence that one of the main reasons that we've gone after Gaddafi in Libya is because he has his own central bank, and he's been trying to convince most African nations and Muslim nations to get rid of the dollar as the predominant currency, to sell oil for something he called the gold dinar, that's the way he pronounces it, a currency that he would establish, and it would not be part of international central banking system, which our Federal Reserve is a major part of. And this is very disturbing to us. Saddam Hussein had also suggested something similar before we took him out. We're very, very protective of the Federal Reserve system and its equivalents in the G8 countries around the world. And we're very, very protective of the power of the U.S. dollar.
Yeah, they want to keep the dollar as the world reserve currency. The only one that you can buy oil with it is, I think, the biggest issue on that.
That's correct. And, of course, that feeds into the power of what I call the corporatocracy, the men who control our biggest corporations, and through them our government and our mass media, and their power is maintained by the dollar, really. And so they're very determined to continue to keep that central banking system, the Federal Reserve, and the dollar at predominant positions.
It is starting to collapse on them, though, I think, at this point. They're devaluing and they're trying to print their way out of this worldwide, with no gold standard and all these currencies linked to each other. It looks to me like they're starting to implode.
No question. This empire is falling apart. You know, we know from history that empires never last for too long. They always collapse. Now, the scary thing is when someone else steps in, and we don't want that to happen this time. I mean, I think what we want is not to be an empire, but to transition into something that's a bit more compassionate and that will bring stability around the world, that will bring a true economic model that works around the world. This one isn't working, and it's very, very clear. It's what I call predatory capitalism that we have today, and what I talk about extensively in the book Hoodwinked, is this form of capitalism that's extremely greedy, extremely materialistic, and extremely exploitative. A situation where less than 5% of the world consumes just about 30% of its resources. That's us in the United States. And about half the rest of the world is starving or on the verge of starvation. And, you know, this just feeds discontent. And it is collapsing. And we're seeing in the Middle East a huge uprising. I think one of the reasons that we went after bin Laden, that the administration went after bin Laden at this time so strongly, and took such a big gamble, really. I mean, Obama did take a big gamble by sanctioning this attack on bin Laden, and he was successful. But one of the reasons is to take our attention away from what's really going on in the world. You know, it's what's happening in places like Egypt and Syria and Tunisia and throughout the Middle East, in Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, is a lot more significant than anything that Al-Qaeda was really attempting to do. Al-Qaeda, it was really a pretty weakened organization. But these movements that are going on in so much of the rest of the Arab and Muslim world are not weak. They're pretty strong. We'll see what's going to happen.
Yeah, well, Al-Qaeda was weak, and then we started funding them and training bin Laden and them. So, you know, we work with these guys until we need them, and then we toss them aside. And I think that's what happened. And with Gaddafi and them, that's we can't get them because his whole fortune's in gold. And so that's why we can hardly touch him. He can pay all his little minions for a long time through gold. And so we'll have a problem with that. I just wonder why we're not trying to go after China, because China's president's been talking about getting off the gold or off the dollar standard as well. And do you see China in our near future being a problem for us?
Well, I think, you know, China's an interesting situation. China's economy is very much based on our big corporations. Let's face it. China's success has come because our corporations have sold Chinese goods to the world and continue to do so. And so, and also, China is one of our biggest creditors. We owe China a lot of money. China doesn't want to see us fail. Gaddafi's not in that position. He'd be happy to see us fail. China doesn't want to see us fail because we owe them a lot of money. And if our currency fails, the Chinese are going to be left holding a lot of debt that'll never get repaid. And in addition, their economy is extremely dependent on us, our corporations, us as a market, and the other G8 countries. So China's in many respects much more closely affiliated with us, at least from an economic standpoint, than many of the Middle Eastern countries are, with the exception, of course, of the role that oil plays.
It seems to me, too, that they're not the economic superpower that everybody would like us to believe. If they're so connected to us and they depend so much on the rest of the world buying all of their exports, you know, they've got a little bit of an inflation problem in the ghost cities and a little bit of a bubble going on in mainland China, it seems like, too, from what I'm hearing.
There's no question. China is very much at the mercy of the American consumer, as are our big corporations. And it's something that I think we, the people, don't understand and need to understand. It's what I write a lot about in Hoodwinked, is the fact that we really are in a failed economic system, and we need to change that. And we're really living under a new empire, and it's an empire that's not controlled by a government. The U.S. government's not very powerful. Our president's not very powerful. We've seen that very, very clearly when you change from a very conservative Republican oil man to a very liberal Democrat from Illinois, and really not a heck of a lot changes on a significant basis. You know that who's really calling the shots are the big corporations, what I call the corporatocracy. But what we need to understand is that they're very dependent on us. to buy their goods and services. And every time we shop, every time we buy something or choose not to, we're casting a ballot. And I think it's a more important ballot than the one we cast in the voting booth on election day, because these corporations control all of our politicians. They control the mainstream press. And this is true around the world, not just in the United States. It's true around the world. To a certain degree, it's even true in China, although they don't think they have much control over the press in China, but they certainly have a lot of influence in China.
So what do you see the solution as, becoming everybody being more self-reliant, producing more locally? Is that what the answer is?
Well, I'm all for local and really, really support it. My own daughter and son-in-law own a restaurant near Seattle, Washington, that's all local, organic food, and I really like to see that kind of thing happen. On the other hand, the fact of life is that we are a very globalized world, and it's hard to conceive of living without the Internet or without the cell phone connections that we have today. It's hard to conceive of living in parts of the northern parts of the United States without getting fresh fruits and vegetables in the winter. It's just hard to see us moving back to something that drastic. So while I favor local in every possible way that we can make it happen, we also have to face the fact that we are global. We really are, for the first time in history, one people around the planet. We have to understand that my 3-year-old grandson, I can't possibly hope to inherit a sustainable, just, peaceful, stable, sane world unless every child growing up in Africa and Latin America and Asia and the Middle East also has that same expectation. And this is new in history. So although, yes, let's go local as much as we can, but let's also understand that we're deeply interconnected. And that's not going to change, I don't think, and I know it's not going to change unless something very radical happens, which is always a possibility that we'll go through a period of, you know, the apocalypse that some people project. And that's a possibility, but let's hope it doesn't happen. Let's hope we can become more local, but also become much more attuned to and sensitive to the fact that we're not going to have homeland security in the United States until we recognize that the entire planet is our homeland. And as long as there's misery and starvation and exploitation of people anywhere, whether it's in Afghanistan or Venezuela or anywhere else on this planet, in our own cities, as long as people are suffering and are being exploited, there's going to be trouble. And we need to really face that fact and understand the role that corporations are playing in it. And at the same time, the power that we ultimately have over corporations, we the people, have a great deal of power, and I don't think we really recognize that.
Yeah, these corporations, they're the little dirty guys growing up around our central banks, which our forefathers have always warned us about. I agree with you about corporations are our problem. I think it's corporatism, not capitalism, that's the problem. You know, just somebody opening a business and making, you know, working hard and making a living for himself, then that's capitalism, and that's what we need to get back to. We need to get back to the inventiveness that we used to have. We need to get back to our constitution, because now we follow the corporation's constitutions instead, and we're doing that. I liked the way you put it in the hit documentary, Fall of the Republic, how you said it's more like a fog around the world. There's no more lines. It's just these corporations running things. And I think that's a facade, exactly what you're talking about, that, yeah, it seems like they're covering us, but we should be able to get rid of them just as easy because they don't really have protection. You know, as soon as we wake up to them, we just stop buying their goods, I think we could make them fall that way.
I think part of it is going to a gold standard or a silver standard so that they can't keep manipulating the currency, because that's how they siphon off most of everybody's wealth, is through the currency. So I think that everybody, you know, losing the American dollar as the world reserve currency and going back to real money. And I see that as a worldwide trend now, even as we speak. And I think that's probably going to have to happen.
Yeah, that's what China's doing. And India and a bunch of countries are buying all kinds of gold and silver. And I know China's dollar is attached to our dollar, 100 to 1. And I think they want to get rid of all that. I think they're trying to get us back to third world status. Because if you look at it, a lot of the Rockefellers and Rothschilds are moving over to China. But, of course, they're not going to have to follow any of their laws, I'm sure. But
I have a question for you, John. How do you become, you know, how do you get involved with the World Bank? I mean, I was reading your biography, World Bank, United Nations, IMF, U.S. Treasury Department. How did you get involved with these guys and start working for them? Did they approach you? Did you approach? How does that work? I'm just curious.
Well, it's kind of an interesting story. I was in business school in the late 60s in Boston, and did not want to go to Vietnam. I was looking for ways to avoid Vietnam without going to jail or leaving my country and moving to Canada. I was married at the time to a woman whose father was very high up in the U.S. Navy Department. And one of his best friends was very high up in the National Security Agency. So he suggested that taking a job at the National Security Agency could be draft deferrable. I took a whole series of tests, lie detector tests, personality tests, very grueling sort of things, and was accepted. And then I said to go into training for the National Security Agency, which, as you know, is the nation's largest and perhaps most secretive spy organization, even more secretive in many respects than the CIA is, and less well known, but bigger. And then there's a long series of stories connected here, but I ended up going in the Peace Corps for 3 years to Latin America, which was part of that training in a way, of preparation at least, learning another language, living in the Amazon, learning to live very self-sufficiently on my own off the land, etc. And then when I got out of that, I was recruited by a large consulting firm, Charles T. Maine, which no longer exists, incidentally, but at that time was a 100-year-old, very well-established, very secretive consulting firm in Boston. And I went through this training with this woman named Claudine, who I describe in detail in my books, who basically told me what my job would be. And it's pretty much as I identified it before, where we, you know, go to a country with resources our corporations cover, arrange these large loans through the World Bank. The World Bank becomes a tool of ours, et cetera, et cetera. And so I went to work for this company as an economist and very quickly excelled at that. And basically, my job and what the National Security Agency had identified in me, why I got this job, was because I did have a background in business school, but more than anything, I was a pretty good con man at the time. And so that's what it takes to do this. I rose up very quickly in the company. I became its chief economist. I had a staff of about several dozen people working for me, and became a partnership, a closely held corporation. I became its youngest partner in its 100-year history. So I rose up through the ranks pretty quickly because I was very successful in these countries where I worked.
Oh,
yeah. Well, with that, first I'd like to let everybody know, if you'd like to call in and ask John a question, you know, talk to him anything you'd like. Our number is 530-605-4567, or we're streaming live at www.kcnr1460. You can get in here and chat with us. John, we're going to take a little break, and when we get back, I'd like to talk about, things that I guess we can do to prepare and to get ready some more like that, like you said, and what we need to do to remake them. So let's get back into more that we can do to overcome this problem that we have.
Wonderful.
Okay, yeah. So with that, this is KCNR 1460 AM, Shasta Redding, the home of Free Fire Media.
Truth in lies and pieces scattered on the newsroom floor. Sometimes they'll tell you to just let go when you're sure you should hold on tight.
Listen to the wind blow. Advanced soil stabilization using Technosoil for dust control on driveways, roads, parking lots, and pathways. Advanced soil stabilization also installs crushed stone driveways. Call Todd Sykes for more information at 530-549-4801. Advanced soil stabilization is green friendly and eliminates dust.
Listen to the wind blow. Watch the sun rise.
Shasta County seniors, families, and caregivers, it is time for the 2011 Spring Senior Expo inside Macy's, Wednesday, May 25th. This is your chance to learn about businesses and nonprofit agencies that serve seniors. The first 100 seniors receive a special gift in their goodie bags at the door. And shoppers save an additional 15% with your Macy's card. Visit over 40 booths inside Macy's from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. Enjoy breakfast with Carl and Linda Bott broadcasting Free Fire Radio live inside the mall from 7 to 9 a.m. Enjoy a spring fashion show at 10 a.m. and a grand prize drawing for three Macy's shopping sprees at 1 p.m. Vendors include A Brand New Day, Ray Tegerstrand's Orthopedics, Mercy Medical Center, Advanced Imaging, Medical Home Care Professionals, Shasta County Veteran Services, and MD Imaging. Sponsors include Home Helpers, Marianne Seifert of Senior Placement Services, Margie Wapshaw Insurance, Northern Rehab and Respiratory Equipment, Precious Cargo, and Macy's. The 2011 Spring Senior Expo, Wednesday, May 25th at 8 a.m. Special thanks to KCNR 1460 AM and AM 1230 KLXR.
Psych Talk, psychology for everyday life, brought to you by National University. Join me, Katie Cundy, registered marriage and family therapist intern, every Saturday at noon. Each week, I will introduce you to the North State's top mental health professionals. Join me as I explore current research and local resources that will help you and your family reach their full potential. Psych Talk, every Saturday at noon, right here on KCNR 1460.
We will overcome, so stand up. We shall not be moved, except by a child with no socks and shoes. If you've got more to give, then you've got to prove. Put your hands up, and I'll copy you. Stand up, we shall not be moved, except by a woman.
Welcome back to Sovereign Minds. We have on the phone with us John Perkins, author of his new book, Hoodwinked, an economic hitman reveals why the world financial markets imploded. John, are you still there?
I'm here.
All right. So, let's just get into a little bit of what we can do to make this better, if anything. And then after that, maybe your little, I'd like to just kind of get your take on just the whole central banking system and the elites such as the Rothschilds and Rockefellers that have been doing this to our country and the world for centuries now, if that would be okay.
That'd be fine, sure, yeah. And I'd just like to mention that I'd love to have people go to my website, johnperkins.org, subscribe to my newsletter, which comes out about twice a month, and I talk about many of these things. And I'm also on Facebook and Twitter at economic_hitman. I'd like to, you know, keep in touch with some of your listeners if they care to do that.
Oh, yes, please, yeah. Is that the best way to get a hold of you?
Yeah, I think my website, johnperkins.org, is probably the best way, yeah, and they can contact me through there too.
Okay, great. Yeah, so well, let's end on the positive note. Let's go ahead and get into the Rothschilds and Rockefellers now, and then we'll end on with the positive. But so what's your take on just this our country's struggle with the money changers, as we like to call them?
I think it's I'm sure by now your listeners are very savvy, but it's not a well-known fact in the United States that the Federal Reserve is a private bank. People think that it's controlled by civil servants, by the government, but it's not. And actually, it's just one more case for why privatization is not necessarily the right way to go. You know, the economy that we have today is, you talked about earlier, I agree with you that capitalism is not the problem, it's corporatism. And it's really the fact that since the 1970s, and particularly beginning in 1980, we adopted a system here, which I call predatory capitalism, which was defined especially by Milton Friedman in the Chicago School of Economics. It says that the only goal of business, the only responsibility of business is to maximize profits, regardless of the social and environmental costs. It also says that businesses should not be regulated, because businessmen are beyond regulation. And three, everything should be privatized, the military, the banks, the schools, the jails. And that system, which is relatively new, it's different from the Keynesian system that I was brought up with in business school, has led us to a terrible situation. And, you know, this banking system is a very good example, a privatized central bank, one that's owned by the big money interests. Like the ones that you mentioned, the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds and people like that. And actually the Bin Laden family has been involved in all those things too, through the Carlyle Group. So we're at the mercy of these private organizations whose sole responsibility is to maximize profits for their primary owners, who are the very, very wealthy and the very, very powerful. If you have a banking system that's basically run by the people and administered by civil servants who are responsible for reporting to the people, you've got a very, very different situation. And we have a few of those around. There's one in North Dakota. Some of the states are looking at this. Some countries like Ecuador and Bolivia, are very seriously trying to establish a new form of banking. Libya, as you point out, has that, backed by 144 tons or so of gold. So there are exceptions, but the desire of the corporatocracy is to control all of these banking systems around the world, very much as they control the one here in the United States.
Right, and there's only four or five countries that don't have a Rothschild finger in them, and these are countries like Iran and these and Venezuela and countries that Iraq. And obviously the ones that we are going to war with for some reason. And I just thought that was kind of curious.
Right, our enemies, you know. if the Rothschilds and the others don't have their fingers in the pot, then the country's by definition our enemy, I guess. You're exactly right. You hit the nail on the head. That's true, you know. Venezuela, Iran, Iraq, Iraq's changed now, Libya, and so on and so forth. And you know, while we talk about oil, and certainly oil plays a role, but I really think a more important role is this desire of our elite, our corporatocracy, to control the currency and the banking systems around the world.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. That's why they were never intended. You know, there are some things that are enumerated in the Constitution to the government, and so what's happened is Congress has actually given that power to a private bank, and it's really easy to prove they're private. Just go to the New York Fed website, go to their how they're organized. None of their bylaws, it tells you they got stockholders. But that is supposed to be the Congress's job, is under the Constitution, it has the power to coin money and regulate the value thereof, not print money. It was supposed to coin money, and that way your representative would be directly accountable to the people if they were screwing up the banking system.
And also we wouldn't have interest on the debt. We wouldn't charge ourselves to print our own money.
Yeah, we might have inflation, but there's no interest. And you're correct. With South Dakota, they have their own state bank. So it's the fact that they can print money out of thin air, it's the fact that they charge interest on the money they print out of thin air that's the problem, and there's no backing for that. And that should be something that should be accountable for. That's what they've done. Our representatives have given them that power, so they act as a buffer to our representatives. They can say it's not our fault, it's the Federal Reserve, you know, they have to be separate from us, you know, because if we had the power, then, you know, Nancy Pelosi would be in charge of it, and, you know, just a bunch of dumb things like that. In fact, our local representative won't even really talk about it at all. I mean, you can't even ask him a question and get a straight answer.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it goes deep, because you're absolutely right. I completely agree with you. But and I think we also have to recognize today that although I think during most of my lifetime, I'm 66, during most of my lifetime, I think our elected officials pretty much wrote the laws of this land. But that isn't true anymore. The lobbyists write the most important laws of our land. They pass them through our elected officials, but our elected officials can't get elected anymore unless they have corporate support, large amounts of money coming in for corporations. So,
well, and the media as well. And the media as well. I mean, you just look at some of these last elections. If you're not mainstream at all, I mean, you just look at Ron Paul. I mean, they just try to discredit him at every point that they can, you know, to make sure he's not on board with the guys.
Right. No, the big corporations control the media, and they control the politicians, and not just in this country, but in every major country in the world. And the ones where we don't have that control, if they have any power at all, we tend to go to war with them, or we send in economic hitmen and jackals and try to compromise their governments in one way or another. And I think it's really important that we, the people, understand that. because what I so often hear, and I travel around the country, the United States, a lot, speaking at universities, at business schools, et cetera, and you know, you hear so often, well, if only Obama gets elected, or in the next election, if we can just keep peeling out and put some, whatever, you know? It's like people are looking for the politicians to change things. They're not going to. And I think we need to understand that.
I think the people are starting to. I think the people are starting to see that, and I think they're starting to try to make changes at the local level and then work their way up. I know the Tea Party has been very instrumental in starting to concentrate on the local politicians, the local governments, and then, because you can't change Washington right now. You got to start small and work out.
Yeah, that's national level. Obviously, one vote may not do very much. Locally, though, your one vote will go a lot further. Hey, John, we have actually a caller on line two. Rich, are you there with us?
Yes, I am.
Well, you're on the air with John Perkins. What kind of questions do you have?
All right. Hey, thank you very much. My question to you, Mr. Perkins, I was just kind of curious myself in knowing our relationship, America with China, how that's going to play out, particularly with them importing the Chinese goods, like the Chinese automobiles, for example. There's been a lot of talk for a while how they are going to be importing cars into the U.S., and it hasn't happened yet. Do you know anything about that, and what can you tell us?
Well, I don't know specifically about what goes on behind the scenes in that regard. I was in China fairly recently, lecturing there to MBA programs, so Chinese MBA students. And one of the things I was struck by is how those students are also very, very concerned with all of these situations. They told me that China has experienced a miracle, and China's proven that miracles happen, because it's the only country in the world that for three decades has had double-digit economic growth. But they said it's come at a horrible price economically and environmentally and socially. And I was told time after time after time by these students that we're going to turn that around. We're going to show that we can have a miracle. We've proven we can create a miracle here. We're going to show that we can now do it in a socially and environmentally conscious way, trying to turn things around. And I think they were sincere. I think it gave me great hope that I think they're going to try to do that, the young people. And I'm seeing this wherever I travel, Latin America, the Middle East, the United States. Young people, I think, are getting it, that something needs to change, that we need to turn things around. And among other things, these young people today in China are very, very much focused on trying to create cars that don't produce a lot of pollution, that don't use a lot of oil. Electric cars, for example, is becoming a big thing in China. So their industry is very focused on that. And I think that may be one reason that they're not producing cars that will appeal to the American public right now, because we're not buying electric cars at this point in time. And while I was in China, the government set a policy that they were going to build stations all over the country where cars could plug in, electrification stations, because that's where they see that whole thing going. So interesting things are happening in China, but ultimately we have to remember that China's economy is very dependent on our corporations selling those goods and services around the world, and they're very, very aware of that in China.
Yeah, but we say our corporations, but these corporations aren't even in America. You know, we tax, so we're one of the highest, if not the highest, business tax rates. And so we push all these companies out into South America or wherever else, but not here. So really, these guys aren't even Americans that run our media. Like, MSNBC ended up getting part of that bailout from GE through GE. And then you look at Fox, and they're run by an Australian. And so it seems like we're being controlled by people that aren't even on our own shores.
Well, our corporations, you know, the corporatocracy is not loyal to the United States. That's for sure. It may sing a song, and sing the national anthem, but it doesn't really give a damn. It's truly multinational, and you're quite right. I mean, here you've got a company like Halliburton, who's our former vice president, the CEO of moving to Dubai. These big corporations realize that we're a globalized world, that we're extremely interdependent, and it doesn't really matter where they are, and yet we are still the largest market. And for all of them, you know, we still consume in the United States about 30% of the world's resources, and we're only 5% of the world's population. So we're an extremely significant market, and whether they're legally located in this country or not, we need to recognize that we, the American consumer, we the people, have a tremendous amount of power. And we have to exercise that by the way we run our economy, by the way we shop, and send messages, constantly sending messages to these companies. You know, let Nike know that we're not going to buy from them because they still have slaves working in sweatshops in China and Nicaragua and elsewhere. And we're not going to buy from them until they change. You know, let them hire people in those countries, but pay them a decent wage. Are you still there?
Yeah, sorry, that was the other caller just hung up.
Okay, and so anyway, we're this very globalized economy, and we, the American consumer, have a lot of power. I think we need to understand that we sent a message to these corporations in the past that we want cheap T-shirts, and if that means they got to be made by slaves, we'll just look the other way. We want cheap petroleum, and if that means destroying the Amazon rainforest, we'll look the other way. And we need now to send a new message out there. We need to send a message that we want to create a world that our children and grandchildren are going to want to inherit.
Sounds to me like this whole thing is an educational problem. I mean, across the board, worldwide, it seems like, you know, we've got to get our heads out of the fog that the media has been putting into us, and our educational system here in the States as well. I mean, gosh, we've got, you know, you watch a couple of these videos where the teachers are trying to get Marxism into the classroom, you know, and trying to figure out how to do it. I mean, that seems to be probably, to me, the biggest problem is that they don't understand freedom, they don't understand the Constitution, and they're being fed a lot of disinformation so that they don't get it.
Yeah. Well, our education system is very oriented toward creating pawns to work for the big corporations. There's no question. And our colleges are very much that way. It's not about us getting a real education. So I totally agree with you. It is about the education system. You know, I'm very struck by how when I went to college, which is a pretty long time ago now, we lived in dorms, and on the dorm I stayed in, I lived in, there was you know, one bathroom for, I don't know, maybe 50 boys on one floor, and you know, it was pretty rough conditions, but there was a lot of freedom in education. The college I went to was very strongly opposed to the Vietnam War, for example, and that was fine. Even the president of a college could stand up and speak out against it. But today you go into the colleges, I have a godson who's in college, and it's almost like a luxury hotel. They live pretty good lives. On the other hand, none of the college presidents are speaking out about anything important. They don't dare. They're so heavily financed by big corporations that they've really become the puppets of those corporations, too. And I think that's a very dangerous situation.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at it, everything is a corporation now. Even us, we are a corporate number. Our court systems, our city systems, they're all corporations. And so now they're going to do whatever's good for the corporation to make money instead of, obviously, what they should be doing is what's good for the people, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and will you tell me then, why is it that we, the people, constantly seem to buy into this idea that, well, let's privatize? The answer is to privatize. If you don't like the way the utility companies are being run, then privatize. Let them go private. If you don't like the way the insurance companies are being run, then let's or the healthcare system in the United States, then let's privatize it. Because what we've seen is that privatization feeds the very wealthy. And there's just no question about it. And our civil servants may not always be the most efficient people, and perhaps they are, can be open to corruption, but there's ways to get around that. I still think in so many areas that it's much better to have people who are sworn to protect the civic, the public good, running a lot of these systems, our school systems, for example, our jails, our military, than to have these systems run by people whose only responsibility is to maximize profits for a very few wealthy people at the top. I mean, we're really seeing that happen now with the military in Afghanistan. It's become a privatized military. There's more mercenary privatized soldiers in Iraq today than there are U.S. Government soldiers.
I think too. I have to disagree with you a little bit on the business side of it. I think what it is we need a free market, but we haven't got a free market. And we haven't had one for a long time, and we need to be involved in the government. Whatever is power is given to each level of government, whether local, state, or federal. You know, you want to have a smaller federal government, but at the local level, it's good to have them involved. But the people have to be involved with the government at every level. That's the problem. We've been kind of, you know, wanting to be left alone, let us do our thing for a long time. And the real deal is that no matter what the deal is on any level of government, the people have to get involved and oversee what's going on. That has been the problem period, is nobody's watching who's doing what.
Yes, you're absolutely right. You know, when Obama ran for president, he said, yes, we can. Once he became president, those people who supported him sort of turned that around and said, yes, he can.
Yeah.
They didn't stay involved. And that was true with Bush, too. And it would be true, you know, it would have been true with McCain.
Oh, they're all the same guys. Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, Bush was Obama light. You know, they just take things and they twist it. It's like this WTF, you know, win the future. You know, that was off of some email. Well, somebody wrote down WTF, and, you know, most people know that that doesn't stand for win the future, but they turned that right around into a win the future campaign. I mean, it's ridiculous. The amount of disinformation, the amount of showboating and, you know, saying they're doing it for the good of the people, when the real deal is they're not.
Yeah, so we need to turn that around, and, you know, programs like yours are so important for getting that message out. But I think we the people have to understand that this falls on us, that in a way our country has been stolen by a bunch of robber barons. And in fact, the whole world's been stolen by a bunch of robber barons. And we've got to take it back. And we can do that. And we don't have to do it militarily, because this time it's not a military empire for the most part. There are parts of the world where the military has stepped in. But for the most part, this has been an empire that's been built on subterfuge and on economic shenanigans. And we can take it back. We just need to understand the importance of doing that and turning our economy around, creating an economy that really produces things that will make it a better world. You know, there's a tremendous amount of room for that.
Well, I tell everybody too, we need to get back to the honest money system. You know, we need to get out of Federal Reserve notes and get back to gold and silver, or a money that's backed by gold and silver.
Yes, and the question is, how do you do that? And as long as these big corporations have the control, the power that they have, it's not going to happen.
Yes.
You know, you and I can talk up a good story about it and tell the people, but what we've got to do is convince the big corporations that it's to their advantage to make that happen, or we're not going to buy from them anymore.
Yeah, see, I see it as the like business, yeah, privatizing, yeah, it becomes a problem too, and which is why I think the unions probably sprouted up in the beginning. But then obviously power, absolute power, will corrupt absolutely, and then now the unions are corrupted, and just like the government, now they have too much power. Now, so I think it's just a matter of we the people paying attention, and once things get we should know that the government and anybody that you give power to is going to try to take as much power as they can, and it's up to us to stop them. And that's what the Constitution is for, is to keep those guys in this confine of the Constitution. And with private business, it's the same way. It's just, I think it's the same people. They just use these two different systems, and then they grow up and they get the power however they can, any means that they can.
Unfortunately, I think we're going to feel some pain before the most of the public really wakes up. The reason they're waking up now is they're starting to feel the pain of the economic situation. And absolutely, that's what's going to have to happen, is that the more that this turns into the greater depression, if you will, because I believe that's what's going to happen, the more people are going to start looking for answers and getting involved. And unfortunately, there will probably be a few casualties along the way before we fix it.
So, John, we have about 3 minutes left. And in closing, what would you like our audience to pick up from you?
Well, you know, I wrote the book Hoodwinked because as I traveled around talking about Confessions of an Economic Hitman, I kept hearing people expressing many of the things that we've all expressed here tonight, and you know, dissatisfaction, frustration, and whether they're on the extreme left or the extreme right, whether they follow Ron Paul or whether they follow Sarah Palin, I'm hearing the same thing. So I wrote this book and outlined five areas where each of us can have an impact, and any person can choose one of those areas and as many sub-areas within each of those five areas where every one of your listeners can get involved and do something. And I think that's the most important thing. You spell out, you say, we have to take a role in government. We do, and we have to take a role in business, too. And so I think what's most important is that if every one of your listeners will pick some area and really get involved, and maybe they want to choose more than one. And that's why I wrote Hoodwink, because it outlines specific things that people can do, and hopefully there's something in there that appeals to everyone. I think every one of us has to follow our own passions. So I have a passion for writing and speaking out, and hopefully some talent in it. You guys have passion and talent for hosting radio shows and stimulating discussion. But everybody out there, whether that person is a carpenter or a plumber or a farmer or a housewife, a teacher, a shopkeeper, whatever they are, they have passion and talent, and you know, they can follow one of these five different areas and go into it and use their passion and talent, but get involved, and let's all get together and decide that we're going to create the kind of world our children and grandchildren are going to want to inherit, a sustainable, just, peaceful, thriving world for everyone. And if we really make that commitment and we each follow our passion and we apply it to taking action, some action every day or at least every couple of days, we will get there, but we have to do it.
Well, there you go. Well, on that note, John, it was a great pleasure for you to come on our show, and I can't thank you enough for coming here, because having somebody like you to really tell us what it's like is invaluable. And
it's my pleasure, and I thank you guys for having the show. It's spreading the word like this. It's really going to make it happen, so please keep it up.
Yes, we will, and we look forward to maybe having you on again sometime.
I'd love to. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, John.
All right. Thanks, John.
Good night.
Good night.
Well, that was awesome. John is the man. But you got anything to say, Mark?
I mean, I don't agree with him on everything, right, but it's great to get that perspective, because he's been out there worldwide doing a lot of things. I mean, I see it differently on the economic side in some ways, but none of us are going to agree on everything. And so the real deal is, and I think the moral of the story is, we all need to get involved in this and bring answers to the table and bring energy and action, so that we're able to develop more and better plans as we go along here, so that we do become the country that we should be, a free society, you know, that's creating freedom throughout the world.
That our founding fathers intended.
Absolutely. I mean, the Constitution is the most dynamic document in the history of the world. Why? Because it's the first time in history that the government was limited and gave freedom in so many different ways to the common man. It, you know, it created equality for everybody, even though at the time it hadn't completely been implemented. But the goal was to create equality for everyone.
Right. They recognized the power that they had to fight against and the evil. But I guess on that note, we have to get going here soon. I want to thank Mark for coming in again. It's a pleasure as usual.
Absolutely. It's been great. Thanks, Nate.
And I want to thank our sponsor real quick, Advanced Soil Stabilization. They use Technosoil for dust control on roads, driveways, and parking lots. Also, they install Crestone driveways. You can call Todd Sykes for more information at 530-549-4801. Advanced Soil is green-friendly, and they eliminate dust, and they're locally owned, so you can't help it. But, yeah, just the message of this show is, people get out there and take care of your own towns, and then the rest will fall into place.
Get involved.
This is KCNR, 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media and Sovereign Minds.
Do not sit idly by. Do not remain neutral. Do not rely on this broadcast alone. We are only as strong as our signal. There is a war going on for your mind. If you are thinking, you are winning. Resistance is victory. Defeat is impossible. Your weapons are already in hand. Reach within you and find the means by which to gain your freedom. Fight with tools. Your fate.
Thank you for listening to KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media. This is KCNR.